We're practicing Satipatthana this week, these days. The title of the retreat is Mindfulness of Mind, but we're really exploring being aware of the entirety of our human experience. That exploration, as Sayadaw sometimes says, that exploration through the observing of what's happening, and recognizing the attitude in particular, we begin to understand that the real crux of our struggle, our suffering, the stress, comes in our relationship, the mind's relationship to experience. And so kind of naturally as we practice, the mind does begin to get curious about the mind's, about the participation of the mind. And so the orientation may kind of gravitate there at times. But we are practicing the Buddha's instructions of mindfulness laid out in the Satipatthana Sutta. That sutta, I think many of you, most of you, all of you are probably familiar with the sutta to greater or lesser degrees, but you've all heard about the four foundations, the different areas of experience that we explore in mindfulness practice: body, feelings, mental formations or mind states, the mind states, and the dhammas. That word can be translated as experience. But the fourth foundation really encourages us to explore experience through the perspective of the Dharma. This teaching, the Satipatthana Sutta, can be looked at as instructions for first you pay attention to this and then you pay attention to that. But it also can be understood as kind of just descriptive of what you can notice when you attend to your experience. That we don't have to start with the body and then move on to feelings, for example, but that while observing experience, sometimes certain aspects of our experience might be more obvious. So from the perspective of what we're exploring here, opening to what's obvious, we may be noticing some areas of the first foundation of body experience for a few moments, and then the attention shifts to feeling tone, and then perhaps to a mind state of frustration or a mind state of aversion or confusion. Or then perhaps shifting to the faculty of seeing and being curious about how seeing affects us, and that's in the fourth foundation. So in the Satipatthana Sutta, both kind of perspectives are possible. So I don't think we have to land on one side or the other. I just understand that what we are doing here is exploring these areas of experience. The Satipatthana Sutta has a kind of a structure to it. It starts with a kind of a definition. We could say, what is wise mindfulness? In the very beginning of the sutta, it asks that question. And there's a very succinct kind of definition of what it is. And the exploration is, one observes, one abides observing the body as a body, ardent, fully aware, clearly comprehending, and mindful, having set aside greed and distress for the world. One abides observing feelings as feelings, ardent, fully aware, mindful, having set aside greed and distress for the world. And repeats that for the last two foundations as well, the last two establishments of mindfulness as well. So this is really instructions about how to attend to experience. And I will put a little footnote here as I was reviewing this definition and looking at the translation that Bhikkhu Bodhi used for sampajanya, which is used in this phrase, which often is translated as clear comprehension. There's a section in the first foundation that talks about clear comprehension, that one goes forward and returning, clearly comprehending. So that word is also used in the definition portion as a kind of a frame for how to attend to experience in general. And Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation for that is fully aware. And so I correct myself from yesterday that Bhikkhu Bodhi doesn't use the word awareness in the Pali Canon for his translation. He translates sampajanya, or this clear comprehension, as full awareness. And there's a little bit more on that piece. I won't go into that so much right now, but often I think the most familiar definition that we know of for clear comprehension is that part of the foundation of the body where it describes how one observes the body fully aware or clearly comprehending. And then it goes something like, one acts in full awareness while going forward and returning. One acts in full awareness while bending and extending the limbs. One acts in full awareness while speaking and being silent. So a whole range of those things. But the definition for full awareness is kind of left out of that section. It just says that while being engaged in our bodily experience, we should act in full awareness. It gives a sense of what that means, you know, that we know we're walking while we're walking, we know we're extending while we're extending our arms, we know we're speaking while we're speaking, we know we're remaining silent while we're remaining silent. But there is an actual definition for this, for full awareness, for clear comprehension. And I don't have the text right in front of me, but I know it pretty well. I think it's something like, and how does one observe in full awareness? One understands feelings, thoughts, and perceptions as they arise, persist, and pass away. And so this is about really fully understanding the impermanent nature of experience. And so, in a way, this section, or this part of the definition of what it means to be mindful, how to practice wise mindfulness, brings in to attend to the arising, persisting, and passing away of experience. Of, in particular, feelings, thoughts, and perceptions. And so this, to me, you know, brings in the how we know what the mind is doing while we're doing other things. So if we are observing walking with full awareness, in full awareness, we understand feeling, thoughts, and perceptions as they rise, persist, and pass away while walking. So it's a pretty broad instruction there. Now, don't get too hung up about it. I mean, I like the translation "full awareness" there because it's more evocative. We don't have to like parse it into, okay, feelings. What's happening in feelings? What's happening in thoughts? But it does point to the kind of depth which the Buddha is encouraging us to know our experience in this definition section. So one abides observing. The body is a body, feelings as feelings, mind states as mind states, and dhammas as dhammas. This phrase here, too, I think points to some of the wisdom the perspective of Satipatthana that's encouraged. We observe the body in and of itself. Feelings as feelings. Just the human experience. This is what it's like to be a human being with this pleasant experience arising. This is what it's like to be a human being with this breath arising. So there is that kind of curiosity about experience as experience in the present moment. So this definition portion really brings in some wisdom, how to observe our experience. For each area of those four foundations. Through each of these four foundations, the Buddha offers a number of ways to explore that particular area. So within the body, there's a number of different practices, attending to the breath, attending to postures, attending to all of our daily activities, that part of attending to when walking, bending, extending, standing, remaining silent, speaking, all of that is also part of the body contemplation. And then you know, recognizing the various aspects or parts of the body and the contemplations around death and dying, those all parts of the body. So with each of the foundations, there's different kind of pointings. What is useful to kind of, it's not that we're trying to change our experience, but out of what's arising, what's useful to be attentive to? And with each exercise, the Buddha offers what Bhikkhu Anālayo calls the refrain. The repeated encouragement to attend in a particular way. Again, it to me is like an elaboration almost, or a pointing to kind of an encouragement to abide observing aspects of experience that support understanding and insight, to help us to understand how the mind gets caught and what conditions support moving away from being caught. So what leads us to freedom? So this section of the Satipatthana Sutta in the Pali Canon, there's a little like technical detail, but I kind of geek out on these technical details sometimes and think there's something perhaps useful in them. There's a little bracketed title in our translation. You know what Bhikkhu Bodhi offers is a little bracketed title of this section that says insight. These little bracketed sections, Bhikkhu Bodhi didn't make these up. These were apparently, I understand from Gill at least, you know, he's the one that gave me this piece of information. Those bracketed titles for the various sections of suttas came from the commentarial era, usually. So this is kind of the structure that's laid on suttas is commentarial in nature. And this is not an insignificant commentary about this section of the sutta, that it kind of says, pay attention, this is how insight can happen, this is how insight can arise with this exploration. And so this refrain or this section of the sutta has been intriguing me in the last weeks. I've been talking about it in another class, and it's kind of captured my attention, and it's arising again this week. So I'd like to take some time to spend with you looking at this part of the Buddha's instructions on mindfulness. What is it that supports understanding? So this refrain has four aspects to it. It's really four sentences, kind of. I'll read it to you right now. And again, it's repeated for every single exercise in the Satipatthana Sutta. So, you know, the wording changes between the four foundations, and I'll read it this time for the body. So all of the exercises in the body have this same language. In this way, one abides observing the body as a body internally, or one abides observing the body as a body externally, or one abides observing the body as a body both internally and externally. Or else one abides contemplating the body in its arising factors, or one abides contemplating the body in its vanishing factors, or one abides contemplating the body in both its arising and vanishing factors. Or else mindfulness that there is a body is simply established to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and mindfulness. And one abides independent, not clinging to anything in this world. This paragraph is kind of a roadmap for us. It starts with this encouragement to explore, experiment, experience internally and externally, and contemplate the impermanent nature of experience. The third one is kind of this establishment, a simple establishment of mindfulness. The phrase is to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and mindfulness. Again, to me, this recalls the Bahiya Sutta, you know, that kind of encouragement. No, seeing is seeing. In the seen is only the seen. This is not a trivial encouragement. And then this abiding independent, not clinging to anything in this world. This, to me, feels like the results. We can incline in this direction towards not clinging, but non-clinging is really the result, the freeing, the letting go of the practice. It comes through attending from these perspectives. So kind of geeking out the way I do, I want to take each of these sentences one at a time. So we'll talk about internally and externally today. This one has really gotten my interest in the last. Since the first time I talked about it a few weeks ago, you know, it's like, wow, this is really interesting, this exploration. And so that's kind of got some juice for me in my own practice right now. So the phrase says, one abides observing the body as a body internally, or one abides observing the body as a body externally, or in both internally and externally. But nowhere in the Satipatthana Sutta does it tell us what internally and externally mean. So, you know, we need to kind of do a little digging here, and thankfully Bhikkhu Anālayo has done quite a bit of digging for us. And also in Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation, he points to what the commentaries say. You know, the commentaries say that this internally means we pay attention to basically our own experience. You know, what's happening with this mind and body, with these five aggregates here, with this bodily process tumbling on. That's the internal exploration. And that the external exploration is being curious about the experience of other people. So that's what the commentaries say, and there's not a lot else. There's some more, you know, modern meditation teachers more recently have decided that this doesn't make any sense or something, or maybe there's other ways this can be described or something. And so there have been other proposals, but actually, where I've been finding my juice, and some of those other proposals, Bhikkhu Anālayo goes through this, and many of you may have read his book, The Satipatthana, The Direct Path of Realization. And he goes through those other explorations, other kind of framings of what internal and external might be. For instance, internal in the body versus external in the body. Like, you know, at the skin level is internal, and at the skin out is external. Or perhaps the internal and external aspect of the sense bases, which is seeing versus the eye. You know, the eye being internal, the seeing external. So there's different ways to think about internal and external. But I'm not going to try to go there, because my own exploration in the last few weeks, and in when I've done this in the past, because I have explored this in prior, I think it was one of my early retreats, I explored this a little bit after somebody talked about it in a Dharma talk. It's been around looking at the observing other beings, and the commentaries apparently specifically mention other human beings. But I've played with it with looking at cats, too, and that's been really fun. So, you know, if you've got another being walking around in your house, you can explore this with this, too. So this internally and externally, let's just keep it simple for today and explore that perspective of internally means basically observing our own experience, observing the body, the feelings, the perceptions, the mental formations, and the knowing aspect. So the five aggregates internally. This is largely what we teach in mindfulness practice. This is that modern meditation teachers largely teach this. So we're pretty familiar with this aspect, this area of this encouragement, observing experience internally. It's like we just speak about, you know, observing the body, observing our feelings, observing our mind states, and we don't point out, well, this is our internal experience. But we all kind of know what this means. So this is not. Too challenging to know what that means when we're encouraged to observe the body as a body internally. So we're encouraged to observe our interior experience. And I think this is a useful pointing. And this is essentially what we all learn when we first sit down to meditate. Oh my gosh, there's a world in here. You know, there's stuff going on in here. I had no idea I could watch this stuff. And so this is really a great learning that this is happening. And, you know, Bhikkhu Anālayo points out that the internally in the refrain, the internally comes first. So exploring our internal experience kind of creates a foundation for what follows. And in my experience, that does seem true. That because we explore internally and recognize, you know, we recognize that what's going on in here, there's not a lot of control. You know, it's like we see the conditioned nature of our experience, and we see how hard it is to have our minds do what we'd like it to do. It's kind of following its own trajectory from how it's been conditioned. And so we explore cultivating new conditions that begin to encourage the mind in a direction towards wholesomeness. So what we observe internally, and in this internal observation, we start seeing the process nature of our own experience. We see that it's conditioned unfolding. And this is some of the insight, you know, we're all kind of familiar in some ways with some of the insights that come with the internal observation of experience. Seeing the impermanent nature of experience and how the holding on to that impermanent experience creates stress and suffering. The ways in which identification and beliefs and views create limitations and perspectives that don't let us see certain things, bias us towards observing experience and seeing things in a particular way. So we begin to understand something about our experience. And this supports us, I think, when we start being curious about observing externally, observing others in the world. And so, you know, this phrase, you know, we abide observing the body as a body internally. So the body as a body, we abide observing feelings as feelings internally, mind states as mind states internally, phenomena as phenomena internally. So that's looking internally at our experience. But we abide observing the body as the body as the body, or a body as a body externally. We abide observing feelings as feelings externally. And given the context of the commentaries, we abide observing a body as a body in others. We abide observing feelings as feelings in others. Now, if we hadn't done the exploration of our own experience first, I think this might lead to a kind of, what's the right word? It's like seeing the others as other. Kind of a separation or a distancing, or that it might be, oh, that's just a body walking through space. It's just like, you know, meat walking through space. You know, it might create the sense of, you know, almost some kind of disconnection. I can see this, you know, observing externally, a body as a body, feelings as feelings. It kind of, in the languaging of it, it almost feels like or sounds like you're stripping the person of humanity. But when we've observed our own experience, a body as a body internally, feelings as a feeling internally, we see, as the mindfulness gets more intimate with experience, we see it doesn't kind of strip us of humanity. You know, it actually creates almost a more intimate connection with experience, not to have these filters of who I am and what I do and how I do things in the way of that meeting. And so kind of similarly, my own experience in exploring this, having done a lot of the internal exploration, you know, when I started teaching about this a few weeks ago, I don't actually get to see a lot of beings right now, except on the computer. You know, I don't get to see beings in space, and I'm only seeing like little pictures of you, and not very much of you at that. You know, from here up or something. So you know, I try it a little bit in this form, but there's something more like juicy about it in real. Real. This is real too. I mean, you are there. You're sitting there, in person. I guess there's something a little more juicy about it, at least for me, at this point. So maybe my external observation needs some work in this Zoom world area. But in any case, I get to see people when I take my walks each day for about 30 minutes. I kind of run into people in that realm. And then when I go to the grocery store once a week, and that has been fun. You know, the other day, a couple weeks ago, it was a long line for the store. You know, I got just there at just the time when everybody else decided to go too. So I was waiting outside for quite a while and watching people kind of come and go from the store. And I remembered about this observation. And so I started kind of being curious. Oh, there's a body. There's a body walking across the parking lot. There's a small body skipping across the parking lot. And, you know, so small body skipping across the parking lot, big body kind of following. And, you know, so the experience there was just so delightful. It actually took me closer to the humanity of beings, you know, living their lives. A little girl skipping in front of her mom to the store. It was just so much kind of joy in that experience. Now, I don't know if the little girl was experiencing joy. I mean, that was my experience, but it felt in a way like not only was I observing the body doing something, but my response felt like, I mean, it was a kind of an inference almost. The joy that I was experiencing was like an inference for what the little girl might be feeling. Kind of the delight of being with her mom and going to the store, probably, you know, doesn't get out very much either, and it's like a big trip, and, you know, so it's just all of that was kind of there. And this is something that the commentaries also point to in the external exploration, that, you know, the first one we can directly observe. We can directly observe a body as a body externally, the bodies of others doing their things. But the other three foundations of mindfulness need to be more inferential, need to be inferential. We can infer what somebody's mind state is, often based on an expression on their face or their gestures or their body language. There can be an inference of what the mind state might be, what the feelings might be, what might be going on for them. And there's a little extra note that says something like, except for those who have psychic powers, this needs to be inferential. So, no, I don't have the psychic powers, so I'm content to work inferentially. And it doesn't indicate that we have to develop the psychic powers to do this external contemplation in the commentaries. So we are free to observe externally, absent the psychic powers. So what I found in that kind of observation was not that it made it look like this is just me walking across the parking lot, but it actually kind of stripped away any views or ideas or beliefs I might have about this mother and daughter, and it just took me into the humanity of a mom and her daughter walking across the parking lot, going across the parking lot. There's a more sense of connectedness, more of a sense of the humanity of it. So perhaps this is some of what, you know, the encouragement is, you know, that as we see internally our own processes and how the, you know, the struggles of our own mind kind of get in the way of our own happiness, it gives us a little bit of perspective or compassion for understanding other beings. This is true for other beings too. Again, inferentially, but this is not just me for whom this is a struggle to work with the conditioned nature of the mind and the ways in which it habitually moves in the direction of stress. And yet the power and the beauty of bringing mindful attention that supports moving in the direction of freedom. So the third part of this sentence is observing both internally and externally. And again, not sure exactly what this means, but maybe that's a little bit of what I was doing when I felt the feeling of delight and joy while observing the mom and her daughter. Like, it wasn't just about seeing. There was seeing and understanding how this being was affected by that. Some of it felt like, and another example from that same day, which was a little more clear in a way, you know, that the first one, that one, there were three examples from the line standing. I don't think I'll go through all three of them, but that first one, it kind of felt like I was feeling the kind of state of the little girl. You know, that was the experience. It felt very resonant with what I was seeing. You know, that it felt like that was a kind of a, you know, in a way that exploring the delight that was being experienced in me felt like a reflection of what was experienced in the little girl. So kind of an external observation of her mind state. Holding that with a grain of salt, because I don't know. I don't have the psychic powers. But another case, I was watching someone stand right in front of me. The person right in front of me was standing with a cell phone and kind of absorbed into the cell phone and, you know, was attending to the line moving, so, you know, keeping up with the movement. But the posture this person had, they were standing and their head was so far bent forward. It looked painful to me. You know, it's like, you know, instead of holding the phone like this so the neck could be in a posture issue, they were holding it like this. And the head was kind of bent down. And, you know, observing that, there was a kind of a sense of pain, you know, kind of a sense of pain, potentially pain, that might not be being felt because of the absorption in the experience, in what was happening on the phone. But there was also some emotions in my experience there, like, you know, a little bit of compassion, a little bit of kind of, you know, sadness that there was such a kind of life being lived through the phone. You know, that felt like me. You know, that felt like an internal observation. That didn't feel so much like it was a reflection of what the other person was feeling. Now, maybe the kind of the absorption quality, that piece, which I got, you know, kind of the zoned into the phone, that was a piece that might have been more the external kind of sense of the mind state of the person. But there were other things going on too that I was feeling, you know, the sense of compassion and the sense of concern for the person that they were so wrapped in that without, you know, being aware of the damage, you know, the kind of that over time, that kind of damage that can do to the body. So that was kind of an example of like the internal external there, you know, that there's the, and it, I think it's interesting and useful in this exploration to, and this is something I do a lot in practice meetings too. Is like kind of like there's a resonance that happens with people when I'm listening to them, and it's like, I hold it with a grain of salt, but, you know, it's like, oh, this may be something of what's going on in the other person. It's like information, how I am in resonance with people based on posture, facial expression. And then there's a lot of stuff coming up for me about, you know, how this relates to what I understand and my own experience and terrain like this and what I could offer. So there's both the internal and the external going on. And it's really useful to have a sense of when something is more that reflective quality, when it might be based on kind of, you know, maybe related to what science calls these mirror neurons, right? You know, the way that our system seems designed to like almost mimic others. I'm told that like the facial expressions get mimicked in a way. When you see somebody, the facial expression gets mimicked, and facial expressions can put the mind into a state. And so that may be part of how that works, that empathetic resonance works, so that we can kind of read other people's states through that awareness. But it's really useful to kind of be curious about what is might be connected with what somebody else is experiencing and what is clearly my own. And that's a useful internal-external exploration. So, Bhikkhu Anālayo points out that in the Pali Abhidhamma, the early versions of the Pali Abhidhamma, in the texts called the Vibhanga, that text puts this internal and external phrase not in the refrain, not in the part associated with insight, but in the definition part. So actually encouraging the internal and external right from the get-go in how we frame and establish mindfulness. That's partly why I'm talking about this particular piece a little bit earlier in the retreat. Because I think it's a real opportunity for us to expand and broaden our field of attention. Often we do explore, you know, others, but we do it more from the internal perspective. It's more like seeing is happening, as opposed to there's a body moving through space. This is a body. This is another being. That's another piece for me of what kind of cuts that idea that it creates a that might create a sense of, you know, dissociating from the humanity of somebody. It's like, contrary to that, you know, our usual habit of mind is to think of people as them often and not as kind of equal beings. And so this kind of exploration kind of levels the playing field. We're doing an internal exploration of a body as a body and an external exploration of a body as a body. And there's more of a connection of that humanity in that field. Also, I think in this form of retreat, you know, I might hesitate to express this in a residential retreat because, you know, having everybody sit there like observing everybody else, that might get a little, you know, people might get a little uncomfortable with that in person. So, you know, I might hesitate to express this teaching on residential retreat. But here in this form, you know, you can observe. I don't encourage you to do this when everybody's meditating with their eyes closed. You know, that's actually in our instructions, that we wouldn't be looking at people in the meditation hall like that. But when you're out in the world, you know, it's like being curious about that external observation, looking at what happens to you as you expand the field of mindfulness to include this terrain. This may take a little bit of doing at first, but on the other hand, you know, we've started the practice by, you know, so what's obvious? And we have, in a way, we are preferencing the internal, like, just not even explicitly, but we're implicitly preferencing the internal with that what's obvious, based on our practice of observing the internal. You know, if this instruction were more evenly distributed through our practice time, we might find that as we're walking around that the external observation is pretty obvious. You know, when somebody's moving in our field of vision, it's actually more natural to observe them as another human being, as opposed to, well, what's arising is seeing, seeing. And so, you know, it may be that we have kind of preferenced the internal with this what's obvious. And so there may be a little bit of doing to begin to expand this terrain. But if, you know, and so I encourage this actually, when you take your walks, if you take a walk outside, if you have to go to the grocery store, interacting with your beings in your house, you know, in your living space. Many of you I know have other beings in your living space, some human, some non-human. Some of you may not, like me. I live completely alone without pets, but I do have a visiting cat that comes to my backyard every day, so I get to interact with that being. And then I go, you know, I see beings outside. So I'm playing with this right now, and it has been quite delightful to explore this. So the Pali Canon does put this part of the internal-external exploration into this insight section, which perhaps also can be you know, reflected on as an important consideration, that the commentaries say that external observation is sufficient for realization. So it's not like a secondary kind of practice. So just, I want to explore a little bit. We've talked a little bit more, and there's kind of a preference in our teaching for talking about the kinds of insights that might arise with internal observation. But I'd like to kind of point to some of the understandings, and a little bit I pointed to this earlier, around noticing, you know, through the internal exploration, how our own conditioning is unfolding and how, you know, little control we have over these arisings. We have some measure of capacity to meet those arisings with a degree of skillfulness when we've had some training. But what arises, kind of, it's like coming from our conditioning. And so that's, you know, that's just unfolding. And we also know from our own practice and experience that, you know, how hard it is to meet that with some balance of mind and not act out on this conditioning and not just blurt out something because we're a little frustrated right now. We know how hard that is. And so there can be, from seeing that internally, when we see somebody, you know, acting out on what appears to be frustration, you know, maybe witnessing an interchange or seeing the expression on somebody's face that indicates they're having a hard day, and maybe they snap at us a little bit. You know, the kind of understanding that this is frustration arising, this is conditioning arising externally, creates a little bit more of a kind of an understanding of the tumbling on of experience that's happening not only here, but in all beings, in all people. And that can create some measure of balance in our own system about witnessing. Maybe even being the brunt of that playing out. So that's one kind of understanding that can come through this internal and external kind of observation. I think it does take some internal observation first to have that sense of seeing, yeah, this is not just about me. It's happening everywhere. Another piece of this is we can start to see in a very real way through this, especially the internally and externally, you know, the contemplation of both internally and externally, we start to see that, we affect each other. You know, what's arising externally has an effect, like my description of my own experience. You know, seeing the person standing with their cell phone and the posture and seeing a little bit of that externally, but then seeing what that conditioned for me internally. And what I do internally, what has happening for me unfolding internally, that affects how others respond to me also. And so there's this interweaving, a back and forth interplay of conditioning. The freedom in our own experience comes through the letting go of greed, aversion, and delusion internally. We don't have to wait for greed, aversion, and delusion to release externally to have our own freedom. But we can develop an appreciation for this way that we affect each other. It's kind of, through exploring this, I've gotten this whole new kind of image or picture of dependent origination as being not just this internal, you know, mind states arising internally conditioning what's happening here, but mind states arising internally condition actions, which then affect how other people respond. And so it's like, I feel like there are these linked circles of dependent origination running around, you know, linked at that mind state intention area. You know, we're all just like interacting with each other. Our cycles of dependent origination are not these separate little cycles. So this is a powerful understanding. How we influence each other. Ways that our habits and mind states affect not only ourselves, but others. And also, I think in this internal-external exploration, another area for understanding and insight comes in being curious, again, you know, seeing how our actions affect others. Sometimes when we act, you know, the Buddhist teachings to his own son, which I've mentioned a lot in my time teaching, I won't go into that teaching in depth right now, but, you know, he encouraged his son to notice before that he acted, is this going to cause harm? Is this going to cause affliction in yourself or others or both? And this is, again, this is bringing internal, external kind of reflection right into the teaching to his son. The time he was 7 years old, he's encouraging him right from the beginning to do this internal, external reflection. So look, before you act, is it going to cause harm? While you're acting, is it causing harm? If so, stop. You know, if going to, then refrain from the action. And afterwards reflect, did it cause harm? And so it's kind of this, exploration of how do our actions affect others? And sometimes when we reflect, you know, if we follow this, and it feels like a pretty high bar, even though, like, he gave this to his 7-year-old son, you know, reflect before, during, and after, you know, what your every action of body, speech, and mind is like, wow, that's a pretty detailed level of mindfulness. And yet we can, you know, imagine perhaps how a 7-year-old might take it and just the big things, you know. So, you know, we can start with that. If we're exploring before we, like, for instance, say something, you know, well, this thing that I'm going to say, is this going to cause harm? And no, actually, this feels like my intention is really good. The intention is wholesome. And yet we speak and we say something, and then we find out that it lands in a really unexpected way. It perhaps does create some affliction in the other person. Now, one way that we could take that is, wow, there was no unskillful intention there, but so whatever affliction they're experiencing, that's on them. That's their karma. I think that's where we're separating our rings of dependent origination. You know, we're keeping them separate there. It's like, I had pure intention, so whatever's going on over there, that's their business. But that doesn't take into account that, you know, the Buddha encouraging us to reflect afterwards, you know, he didn't say this explicitly, but, you know, he said to, you know, undertake restraint in the future if it did cause harm. But I think that it's not just about purely restraint. I think it's about understanding what you didn't understand. And some of what you didn't understand may have to do with the conditions of the other person. And some of what you didn't understand may have to do with unconscious bias in your own mind. Hidden agendas, hidden beliefs, hidden assumptions about how people, you know, would receive this kind of speaking. And so, you know, I think that this as an internal, external observation of looking externally, how do my actions affect others? Like looking in this interweaving of dependent origination. My actions, my intentions, how do they affect others? You know, to not just take it as, you know, if somebody has a reaction, it's like, that's prime area for, well, there's suffering arising. What did I not understand? Maybe there's something we need to understand about other beings that we don't understand, and maybe there's something we need to understand about our own unseen biases. And so this internal, external exploration in this way can also lead to insight and understanding about unseen delusion in our own minds. When we see our actions playing out in the world in unexpected ways, that may be a time or a place for us to kind of be curious. Is there something unseen, a delusion, a bias in the mind I'm unaware of? Not to judge ourselves for that. We all have that. Though it's deeply conditioned, the ways that we assume things about people, our cultures, our you know, the ways we grew up in our families, all of that is so deeply conditioned. Our assumptions about things. And so not to judge ourselves for it, but to take it as, I mean, I'm encouraging so much about curiosity when suffering arises. And so when suffering arises, internally or externally or both, curiosity, what needs to be understood here? That's what the Buddha suggested about suffering. Understand it. And that may not just be about understanding what's going on in here. It might be something about understanding the external realities of other people. So to me, this is very relevant to our current shared lived experience in the area of civil rights and a growing awakening in the country around this perspective of whiteness that leads to so many hidden biases. And so this is a beautiful exploration, and we don't have to treat it as something other than Dharma. It's curiosity about how suffering comes up and what do we not understand, what can be learned. So we're a little bit over. I apologize for going a little long. I got a little excited. It feels good to be sharing these reflections, and I appreciate your engagement in listening and being curious about this. So, thank you all. Enjoy the rest of your evening. See you tomorrow.